guys for the Wonderful Living Podcast, where we explore the highs and lows of life and the intricate spaces in between. I'm your host, Shaka Smith, and in that vein, we talk to inspirational people about their path through life's complexities. Today, Season 2, Episode 1, we have an actor, advocate, and educator, J. August Richards. So, tell them reading the Wikipedia. I saw the full name. Jaime Augusto.
My government.
Do I say it that way?
Jaime Augusto Richards III.
The third.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. It's a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while since we spoke.
Wait, what's your full name?
Shaka Okwesi Smith.
Nice. Does Okwesi mean anything?
I want to say it means like born in October or February, which I was not, but my mom just liked the name and she didn't know that at the time.
Right.
But yeah, it's been a couple years since we spoke.
It has.
So much has happened since then. We've had COVID.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, oh yeah, we did have a lot.
Well, yeah. Personally.
Yes.
So we went through that and then the actor strike. But on a personal note, you shared your personal journey and you got married. And so, huge shifts, you know.
Big ones.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about how has that changed your outlook personally and obviously professionally?
Wow. I don't know yet. You know, I've only been married for 5 months now.
Yeah.
We got married as a surprise at my 50th birthday party. So, you know, there's this Japanese movie, I think I always call it Eternity, but that's not the name of the movie, but it's about people figuring out what memory from their life they want to spend eternity in, and our wedding was mine. Wow. It was the most special, beautiful day. I was surrounded by people from all aspects of my life. Unfortunately, we didn't get to invite everyone we wanted to invite, but there were representatives from each aspect of my life, and I have goosebumps just thinking about it. And as I told you, it's fresh 5 months.
Yeah.
But it was so transformative to be loved in that way and to have our love be celebrated mm-hmm. by our community. So I don't even know the ramifications of what that means for me as a human being entirely or as an actor, which I'm less interested in. Like these days, I'm more interested in my life and living my life. And then presumably, who I am as a person will translate into my work in a wonderful way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Has that shifted kind of the way you would take on a certain role or certain roles you would take?
It has to.
Mm-hmm.
In my course, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, I have a chapter called Securing the Next Job. And it's the last chapter. And it's about after you've done your series, after you've done how many other seasons you do, there will be that period of unemployment afterwards. And that is a very rich time for you to find something new about yourself to bring to the camera. I don't like to show up the same way between jobs, and I always have a pause, as all actors do, between jobs, but in that time, I really try to find something else to show, and some other theme in my life to bring to the work. I don't know what that is yet. I'm just too busy in this moment living. But when I find that role, I'll know it, and I'll get to translate it into that next role, presumably.
I mean, I still have a little PTSD when you mentioned unemployment and the pause.
Hey, listen, you know what's so funny? The one thing that I've come up with working on this course, which is called Being a Series Regular, is that the one thing we know for sure is there'll be a time when you're not a series regular. And that goes for all of us. So that period is relevant to all of us.
And how do you, I guess you dig into other things, but how do you mentally get yourself to the point where you approach that period with optimism?
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, we actors are such brave people. We are so brave. And all independent contractors and people who go out on a limb for a lifestyle that's not set in stone. It's so brave. And I admire us so much. I've gotten used to it. I really have. But in the first stages of my career, between jobs, I always felt like I would never work again. I was so afraid that I would never work again. And I think that that's something that Hollywood intentionally breeds in actors. They want us to feel disempowered so that we don't show up with our power in the way that we did during the strike.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I love how you said that, but what you have done is empowered, I think, myself included, a legacy of children and then kids and people who are now adults. with your representation. You know, as a black kid growing up, and I'm watching Angel and seeing your story play out, I was a huge fan growing up just to see that I could be on screen and I could have this love story too. What has representation, what do you think the current state of representation is today, and how do you view your role in it? I know we just had the Golden Globes, so maybe something's happening.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question, because I too was inspired by other actors when I was a child watching TV as well. You know, the first name that comes to mind is Blair Underwood. You know, he really inspired me so deeply with his grace and his dignity and his poise and the roles that he played, which felt like roles that I would play one day when I grew up. So I always get really like fanish around him. I've had the pleasure of being around him twice, but I get really, you know, because he inspired me. He's one of many people who have inspired me to pursue my goals. The state of representation today, I think that it's optimistic. I look at the recent Golden Globes, and you know, let's look at just Best Supporting Actress in a Musical or Comedy. You know, there were two black women in that category. You know, in my day, there would be one nominee for the entire year. But this year, you know, we had Coleman Domingo, we had Danielle Brooks, we had Fantasia, we had Devon Joy Randolph, we had, did I say her name right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And, you know, and of other ethnicities as well, which was really exciting. There were, you know, quite a few Korean, people of Korean descent nominated, and of other races as well. So that's promising. There were two LGBT actors in the Best Actor category. So these are all promising results. But I think as diverse people, we all want to know what's that step after representation. Mm-hmm. What comes after the fact that we're in the piece? You know, I think that's something that I ask myself, like, what do my projects look like going forward? Because it's no longer just enough just to be that representative. We want to grow. We want to tell our own stories. You know, we want to be in charge of the narrative. So that's where I think we need to go.
Yeah, I think Taraji kind of hit on that. Talk about this. The whole thing having to start over after each project, regardless of the accolades you won for that project.
Right.
I want
profound.
Yeah, it's sort of just, it speaks to the industry that we're moving forward, but we still have ways to go.
You know, one of the biggest reasons why I wrote my course, though, was to talk about money. Because I feel like just as a culture in general, we don't talk with each other about money. But then when it comes to Hollywood, we really don't talk to each other about money. I think because in Hollywood, we're all trying to protect this mystique of like, oh, you know, the idea is, well, I was just walking down the street and I'm so special that I was discovered and everything just falls into my lap. I don't have to work or fight for anything. And then especially as people of color, marginalized people, we need to have these conversations with each other so we know what to expect and what is, you know, what not to expect. So there's a huge chapter in my course called Money, because I think because of the way I grew up, I've become very good with money, because as a child, we went from having a lot of money to no money. And I kept thinking, why don't y'all just save the money when we have the money so that when we don't have money, we'll have money?
Yeah.
So that created something in me that's become a really great financial planner. And so it works great for this business, for actors. Because again, as we discussed, we're not always working, right? So I also think that there's a thing in the culture that tells actors that they have to be this grand person. They have to live in this house and drive this car and have a publicist and a stylist and a hairdresser and a nail person. And they feel like they're not doing the gig unless they have all of these extravagant things. And I think that that may have been true in the past, but it's no longer true. Actors can no longer afford to self-finance their own celebrity.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm trying to impart in my course. That is an era bygone when residuals, when you did a show, and if you got to 100 episodes, you were set for life.
Yeah.
You really were. These days, not anymore. You're gonna get a nice per episode fee up front, but that money is gonna cut off in a hard way.
So is that the business lesson you would have taught yourself, that you would have learned earlier?
The business lesson I would have taught myself is on my first job, and it only happened on my first job and never happened again. I had the false notion that if they knew they had to pay me more, they wouldn't hire me. So I took a very low fee on my first job and didn't negotiate. In hindsight, my agency and managers may have asked for more money without telling me, but I told them not to.
Yeah.
And that makes me so sad for myself. But it's okay because I learned and I'm writing, I did the course so that no one else would do the same foolish thing that I did. You know, knowing my reps at the time, they probably didn't listen to me. But again, talking about how the business changed, even though at that time I made a lot less than I do now, I actually ended up making a whole lot more on that first job than any job subsequently, because we did 22 episodes a year, we went into syndication, and we went on for 4 seasons. Shows these days don't go on for 4 seasons. So I made a lot of money on that job, even though my fee was like this.
What job was it?
Angel.
Oh. Yeah, that was the show of the
era.
I want to ask you
more about that.
No,
that's fine. I used to wait tables.
Thank you, appreciate you.
So I'm always serving.
But I wanted to ask you. You talked about, you know, getting that car, getting the PR team, getting that success, and, you know, maybe spending unwisely. I think part of that is that was a marker of success. You know,
absolutely.
How do you mark a win? And I think people felt like that was the only way to mark that win.
Absolutely.
How do you mark that win without having to go that route?
Man, that is a lovely question. I think the real win is a long career. I think that's how you mark a win. I think that you go from being 25 to 50 and you're still on TV. And that's the only mark of success. Because how many people do we know who had a hot moment and then we don't hear from them anymore? Unfortunately, our family and friends judge us against the person who is having a hot moment at that moment. So we as actors can sometimes feel like we have to prove to the people in our lives that we are successful. And that is an expensive thing to have to prove, and it's something that we shouldn't have to prove. At the end of the day, we have to just dig in and dial into the fact that we are enough, whether we're working, we're not working, we were successful, had a show, didn't have a show. Everybody, whether you're an actor or whoever, you have to dig into that fact. It's ironic because that's what The Color Purple is about. You know, she goes through all that to realize I'm here. And that's all that matters. I'm here. So that's how we don't prove it. Just the fact that we woke up and are walking around is proof enough that we are.
And in it for the long game.
Yeah, exactly.
In it for the long game.
Yeah.
What role do you think actually affected you or had the most impact on you personally and professionally? Is that Angel or?
No, I mean, I think all of my roles, every role that I've ever played has had an equal impact on who I am as a person. And I think that that's a part of the job. People ask me sometimes, what is your dream role? I always say, the next one. Because it's my job to find out why this role is a dream role and one that I've been waiting my whole life to play. So with every role, I have unearthed a new part of myself and they perfectly map my trajectory from The Cosby Show, when I was a teenager, you know, to Angel, to Raising the Bar, which was a legal show, to Council of Dads, where I fully found myself publicly as a gay man, even into Vampire Academy, where I feel like I came into myself as a super adult, as a elder statesman, if you will. Like, that role was challenging for me because I've never done that before. I've never had to be that authority figure in the center of a show. And so I grew there too, you know? So every role has taught me something about myself, has brought me deeper into myself, deeper into my artistry as an actor. So I can't choose.
Yeah. I love that answer. But from The Cosby Show now, you're the teens, and you said you had your 50th birthday.
Yeah.
Wow. But you get a lot more no's and you get yeses.
Absolutely.
How have you stayed motivated to continue to challenge yourself in this industry?
You know, by doing things like this course. Mm-hmm. So we went on strike. Yeah. There were going to be no jobs. And I had to find a way to stay engaged in my work. And I thought, this is a great time to kind of review everything that I've learned. All of my life, I've been making notes and saying to myself, if I ever did a course about being a series regular, because it's a very specific job. This course ain't about doing a movie. It ain't about doing a guest star. It's about being a series regular. It's so specific. And as I've moved from job to job, I've made these mental notes watching other actors, especially on Vampire Academy, where I was the elder statesman and my closest cast member in age was 30. So I watched them, lovely group of actors, I watched them do things that I did. I watched them do things that I wanted to stop them from doing. I watched them do things that I was like, wow, how does she know to do that? So in that job, it really solidified that I was going to do this course. And this is also me finding another part of myself to share with the camera. To stand on my own sense of authority, especially as a black man in this business, where it's almost as if people subtly don't expect a black man to have an opinion about the business, because there's almost this thing of, well, you should just feel happy that you're working. Yeah. But for me to come out and say, no, this is what I think about that, it's a little shocking for people, and it's a little challenging, and it's a little dismissive, and but it's been fun and fascinating, and I recognize the importance of being a black man teaching.
Yeah.
You know, it's important, not just for black people, for everybody, you know? And every black person that goes out there and becomes an educator is doing the society a service.
Yeah, I think you touched on the challenges of being a black educator.
Yeah.
Has it opened any new opportunities?
Yes, like this. Like, here we are talking about this. My number one goal is, honestly, though, to help people. There's so many challenges involved with being an actor. If I can make it that much easier for you by knowing that this is what you should expect, this is what is not cool. For example, I do a whole section on self-advocacy, because as actors, we are bred to, you know, please. We're bred to, you know, be subservient and complacent, and that is what enables abuse of all kinds. Now, you gotta find the line, right? Because, you know, your call time is at 6 and you don't wanna wake up till 8, that's not self-advocacy, you know? But, so you gotta find the line. It's not about protesting about everything. It's about knowing what is important to you and really taking the time to feel into that. What is real for me? What is right for me? What do I really need in order to bring this character to life? For example, for me, if you and I were doing this scene right now and there was a crew member like right there working, I would have to ask for either them to stop or for them to put up a wall so I can't see them, because it's distracting to me. Now, you have the power to do that as an actor. But sometimes when you first start, especially, you might not feel like you have the power to do that. Someone might ask you to come to their house at 10 p.m. at night, you know, for whatever the reason. You have the power to say no. And you have the power to say no now, you know? And if they mess with your job, there are channels that can be, you know, exercised in order to protect yourself.
Yeah, I love that, because I think we all have that feeling as actors. It's inbred in us.
Yeah.
But to get the education, to have the knowledge, leaves you empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you were coming up with this series, it was just an idea that you wanted to educate, an idea that you had in mind, or was during the pandemic, were you thinking, how do I connect?
Someone approached me about doing it a long time ago, and I was like, absolutely not, I ain't gonna talk about that. And then during the strike, I just found myself sitting down and I just started typing. And I was like, if I did write a course, what would it sound like? What would it be like? What would the chapters be? Oh, these are great chapters. Oh, these are exactly the things I want to talk about. Well, what specifically would I talk about this? So then I wrote half the course just to make sure I had it in me. Then I called the person back and said, you know what? I think I'm ready to do that. I've started it. I wanted to make sure that I had something to say. I do. Let's do it. And she was like, let's do it. So we did it. You know, so I wrote it for about 4 months. I think it took 4 months to write. We shot it in 2 days. And, you know, I've been really enjoying the process.
Yeah.
When the course first came out, I offered a one-on-one afterwards with everyone who took the course for me to see if the information was resonating, but also to, you know, if they had any questions. That was in the beginning, just to, you know, see how it was going. And I was blown away by how much translated exactly as I wanted it to.
And so I feel like now with this new lane, you have your hands full. How are you balancing doing this, your acting career, when you're producing and doing your own stuff, how are you balancing it all?
Okay, so the truth is, and I want this truth to go out there, is like, I don't think anybody's busy right now, actor-wise. They haven't really bought, studios haven't bought any new shows yet. They're figuring out what they're gonna do with their own shows and the ones that they already bought. So truthfully, I'm not busy as an actor right now. And so I don't think a lot of actors are very busy right now. So I think, see, this is what we lose by not having in-person auditions anymore. When we used to have in-person auditions, I could sit in a room with all the guys in my type, be like, is it busy for you? No? Okay, well, how about you? Okay, so it's not just me. Did you get that job from the, oh, you did? How did it go? Did you like it? What did you do in the audition? How do you feel like you got the role? That community, that camaraderie is totally lost and totally missing. So, I was saying all that to say, well, what was the initial question?
Just about how you're balancing.
Yes, so the truth of the matter is, I'm not incredibly busy as an actor right now. I don't think many people are. So the balance is fine at the moment, and I'm really enjoying taking the course off of online and more in real life, like we're doing right now. So I'm really enjoying that.
But have you had moments career-wise where you had to figure out a balance, where things were so hectic and you had to navigate?
Absolutely, absolutely. I fully immerse myself in what I'm doing. So I'm okay to get a little lost at times. Being married now, that's gonna be interesting. I mean, I did do Vampire Academy while my husband and I were still courting, but, and he went with it. I work really hard on my material when I have it. I work on it nonstop. If I have a scene on Tuesday and it's Tuesday, I'm working until Tuesday.
Are you method?
No. No, absolutely not. Maybe because I envy actors who are method. I don't have that kind of courage to be like, call me Rudy, you know, and only refer to me as Rudy. I don't have I can barely tell people to call me Jack, you know. My old friends still call me Jamie. But so no, I'm not method in that way. But I do work super hard, and I always know there's an end date, so I'm okay to be fully immersed.
Yeah. I want to know, what is the advice you would have given yourself, you know, in the auditioning room, Cosby show?
Yeah.
You see yourself, what do you say right then and that?
All my life, I thought I was supposed to be cool. All my life, I aspired to be something other than what I was. And I don't have any regrets because I love the lessons learned along the way. But if I could, I would tell my old self, be fully you, because that's what will reward you. I was always sort of, the qualities that I had that got me a lot of work were ones that sometimes I ran from. My intelligence, my articulateness, my pleasantness, my warmth. You know, I grew up in an era where all of those were negatives, you know, where you weren't even really supposed to smile.
Yeah.
But that's who I am. So I wish I would have just leaned heavier into that when I first got into Hollywood and been okay to not be what society was telling me to be. I did pretty good with it. I think I was 75% there, but even 85% or 90% would have been great. You know, I think it's hard to be 100% yourself in this life, because we are in a universe that is interactive, and we do need society to a certain degree, but that would be my wish for myself.
I love that. Good.
Thank you.
Now, you know, I my guests on the show are always people that I'm a fan favorite of, you know, I'm a favorite in some way. So let's go back to Angel, one of my favorite shows.
Okay.
I want to know, what was your favorite scene from that show, and kind of what was your favorite lesson from that show?
So my favorite scene from that show was, we did an episode that took place at the ballet, and all of the regular characters were involved in that episode. So we spent the entire 8 days together, and Joss was directing, and so we played a lot of board games during lunch. I've just never had so much fun working. I mean, I love those people so much, and we just had such a good time. But Actor-wise, I love the episode Players, where Gunn and Gwen went on an adventure on their own, because it really forced me to get into my leading man bag a little bit. And that was a beautiful taste of that. And so I really, really enjoyed that and would love to do more of that. So that was my favorite. What lesson did I learn? Angel was like a graduate school for me. It was 4 years, more than some change. And I learned so many of the principles that are in my course on that first series, whether I from mistake or because I got it right. But like I said, I was good with money from the beginning, so much so to where my business manager accountant would ask me to speak to other actors about how I was dealing with money. And so this course forced me to write down specifically my philosophies about money and put them into manageable pieces for other people. So that was one of the biggest things I took from it. And I set myself up for financial success from that show.
So that you could continue to be working up until today.
Exactly, which I think is an important tool for longevity. If you trick all your money off trying to be a celebrity or trying to be fabulous, you'll mess up your own sense of longevity, because you need to be able to chill and wait for that next right opportunity.
Especially walking to an audition room, you don't want to be walking in desperate.
Of course. Yeah. Right. They can taste this, sense that thirst a mile away. We've all been there. I know.
It's got to be the one that runs to.
Right. Because I had a 3-year period of unemployment throughout all of this. It was 18 months of underemployment where I did 2 guest stars and 18 months of no jobs whatsoever. And that was right before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the job that brought me out of that drought and solidified for me everything that I wrote in the course, because that gave me the opportunity to see that all the seeds I had planted along the way were correct. And that job sort of revitalized me as an adult actor, because prior to that, a lot of the feedback was, he was great, he just doesn't look like he would have a 9-year-old. I looked super young in my late 30s. I look my age now, thank God. I mean, thank God. And
I don't even think you do.
I'm kidding for that compliment. I'm kidding. No, so I think I am transitioning into maybe a new season now too, which is great.
And speaking of that, Council of Dads, where you play this gay character, how is that taking on that role? Is there any trepidation taking on that role?
Trepidation?
Yeah.
None whatsoever, because I had already played a gay character on Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. But there was that little bit of discomfort and out of alignment-ness with myself, where I was like, I'm playing these characters, but I'm kind of like evading questions about my personal life. And that was so uncomfortable. And if for nothing else, I'm glad that I came out when I did, because I just did not want to go through the press run of Council of Dads, tipping and dipping, you know, and trying to be like, you know, I relate to this character because he's a dad. Do you have kids? No, but, you know. So I wanted to be able to speak truthfully, but I also wanted to give a performance that would have resonated for me as an audience member. And I knew that I couldn't do that unless I was able to tell the producers and the writers and the directors, okay, this is actually my life, so I think the house has to look like this.
Yeah.
And I don't think I should say that, I think I should say this. And I think my relationship with my husband should feel like this. And, you know, and I had to come from a place of authority in letting them know, I'm saying this because this is me. Like, it's not me. It's funny because I thought it was me. But as I started to play the character, I realized just because we have that in common does not preclude me from doing the work of finding out who this other person is. Because he ain't me. He was so much further along than me. I had to catch up to him. So sometimes I think it's a mistake when we go, oh, I already know this experience. Well, you know, from your point of view, it's different for another person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I love that show. Hopefully we can somehow get it back.
Thank you. That would be nice. Yeah. I love that show too.
Yeah, beautiful.
Thank you.
Let's open up a little Q&A. Got any questions?
There you go. I love your interview style. It's
so
very beautiful.
So
you let him talk, and you just are so smooth with the flow.
I couldn't agree with you more. So, and this is our second time.
So yeah, I'm going to definitely check out your podcast. So I wanted to ask you, especially when you talked about these periods of unemployment or low employment and where you are now, could you talk a little bit about the community around you, the writers, you know, especially when you felt confident enough to say, hey, that's not what that person is, you know, could you say that early in your career as you got more secure and more experienced, but just talk a little bit as an actor about the people you surround yourself with outside of acting that help inform who you are as a professional and also as an educator.
My friends are, my closest friends are the friends that I've had for 30 years from the day I moved to Los Angeles to go to USC. So I moved out here to go to USC, and all of my closest friends are my friends from college who are also in the business. And they ground me. I love my friends so much. They're brilliant people, and we do it for each other. You know, we have to have a sense of community as artists, because this town will beat you up and make you feel like you're unworthy and that you don't have something to offer. Community is so important. Again, I think for actors specifically, this whole self-taping moment where we're all now in our own little bubble, we're even acting by ourselves, reading the other lines ourselves, pulling somebody up on FaceTime, you know, it's so isolating. So I hate that the sense of community is lost, and I think that it will push people out of the business faster, and that makes me so sad.
Do you feel, sorry, just to add on, with the strike, do you feel that, when you talk about that self-advocacy, do you feel like the strike kind of led people more to saying we need to develop that community even more? Or are you seeing that now? Are we talking about this interim period post-strike, or something, that a trend you've seen, you know, over like the last 2 to 3 years?
What I loved about the strike is that so many people began to speak their truth about their experience. Actors were showing them residual checks for 1 cent. Instead of trying to pretend like, which is what a lot of people do, that everything's fine, that I'm making all this money and I'm good and I'm fine. I'm lonely, you know. That the strike also brought people out of their homes and together. That was the thing I loved the most about the strike. And I was out there so much to reconnect the community that I lost because of COVID. You know, COVID broke up the community as well. So, sorry, give me that question one more time.
No, I mean, I think that answers it. And I think because that advocacy and community of the strike, I mean, just even listening to people who were like in their 40s saying, you know, I was a successful comedian or a successful actor, and then I had to end up borrowing money.
That part, all of that stuff.
To survive, you know, or those types of journeys. I agree with you. I don't think that it's sustainable to be so isolated in a career where you rely on the energy of others.
And it's not sustainable to be stuck in a mode of the past in terms of like what being in Hollywood used to mean. It doesn't mean that anymore. It will always mean that for a handful of people, but for those of us who are kind of working class and make our living at this, you know, it's much different than it was in the 90s, and I think a lot of people are still stuck in the 90s thinking that being an actor means this.
So a lot of reframing happens.
So much reframing for all of us, I believe, yeah. And I also think that in light of the strike, I think that opportunities are gonna become a little more difficult. I don't know, no one knows the future, but there's a possibility that with all of this consolidation and constriction, there may be less opportunities. So now I think it's more imperative than ever for us to find our voice in other places, to produce our own content, to just explore every aspect of ourselves as creative people. Thank you.
Another question.
Yes, I'm Amaris. I've got two questions. Hello.
Hi.
My first question is, I know you went to school for this, but outside of like being on set and actually having the job, what would you say has been maybe the single most important tool that has allowed you to get better as an actor, just focusing on being good?
Can I answer that question first?
Yes.
It was an acting workshop that I took called the Actor's Gym, which is a lot of the reason, again, why I created the course. These two seasoned actors by the name of Michael Beach and Eric LaSalle taught a course called the Actor's Gym. They were both working actors. They decided to do it to sort of explore their own knowledge about acting. And so, for me, that class was exactly what I needed, because at that point in my career, I was booking mad co-stars and guest stars, and every time I had a series regular, I would not book it. And I couldn't figure out why. I was so frustrated. I remember at my Angel audition, I was on the phone with my manager. Now, this was the series regular that I booked. I was on the phone with my manager on a payphone. Y'all don't know about payphones. Y'all too young for that. But I was on the payphone with my manager, sitting outside of an audition that I was about to book, telling her, I can't do this anymore. I'm tired of banging my head up against the wall. Every time I go in for one of these series regulars, I never book it. I'm not going in. And she was like, sweetie, sometimes you just have to show up. And so I was taking this wonderful acting class called the Actors Gym, and I learned so many tools. I knew I was doing something wrong. They showed me what it was. So because someone so generously helped me get over that hump, I always knew in the back of my mind I wanted to do that too. Now we're in a new medium and a new opportunity, so now I'm gonna do mine online, and that way I can do what they did, but just for more people. So ironically, in that audition, and I'm gonna give you the tool, this is a really powerful tool that I talk about in my course. It's, you know, you have to really feel out the situation and make sure that it's appropriate. You have to do your work and know that this is the right choice. But with this Angel audition, I was really thrown by the material, because it was 3 pages of me going, I hate you, get away from me, I can't stand you, I don't want to work with you, you're terrible, you're an awful person, I hate you. And it was just 3 pages of that. And I was like, if I get stuck on that note, what am I really doing? I mean, there's nothing, okay, I hate him, okay, so what? And right before I walked into the audition, the voice of Meryl Streep popped into my head. And I remember I saw her on a show called Inside the Actor's Studio, and she said, always explore the opposite of what your character is saying. So when I walked in the door, I was like, oh, no. I actually do want to work with him. I want to work with him so bad. I just don't know how to say it, because I'm a foster kid. All of a sudden, this story popped up in my head, and I don't trust people, and I need to push you away so you can prove that I can trust you. And it came to me as I walked through the door, and they asked me to start, and I started, and I did it like that for the first time, and it was divine. Every time I told him to get away from me, I'm about to choke up just thinking about it. I looked at him like, please don't go. Invest in me. And that was also Jay, the actor, talking. So it was super personal. And the casting director was like, she was just looking at me. She was like, can you come back at 3?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention too that at that time the head of the WB had mentioned that she thought I was too clean cut for the role. So I dyed my hair red and I drew on all these tattoos and I went over the time. So when I came back to read for Joss and David Greenwald, I showed up in all this drag. When my audition was over, the only thing Josh said to me was, is this a spray? Can we get rid of this? And I was like, oh yeah, it's a spray. I don't even know why I did it. I don't even know what I was thinking. And he was like, okay. And that was all he said to me, and I had fun. Thank you. So that's the tool. I would say, examine the opposite. It doesn't always apply. It might apply on a line. It might apply in a moment. There are also little tools that you can use that help you stand out too, like maybe sarcasm, like things that are not, that are hard to translate on the page, but are used a lot in real life.
Yeah.
Taking a new spin on a familiar line. So that's the tool. You said a second question too.
Yes. Okay, so my second question. So you mentioned how you got a lot of inspiration from the types of roles that Blair Underwood decided to take. And so you also mentioned like you're trying to also determine what those roles look like for you moving forward.
Yes.
What is your through line? Like, what are you looking for? And then how important do you think that is when you're first immersing into the acting world?
That's a great question. Like, I feel like my very first job in life was on The Cosby Show, because at 14, I looked at the show and I was like, that looks like a show I should be on, that I could be on. So I identified myself and my type, and went through some channels. I basically called the casting director myself 14, asked him to put me on the show. But I had to keep calling because I would get his assistance first, and I'd say, hey, my name is Jamie Richards, I want to be on the Cosby Show. And they'd go, what? And just hang up on me. And one day I called, and the casting director, Barry Moss, answered the phone because they were short-staffed. And I said, my name is Jamie Richards, I want to be on the Cosby Show. And he said, kid, do you have an agent? Do you have a manager? I was like, no. He was like, you don't know how this business works? I was like, no, I just want to be on the Cosby Show. And he said, well, I'm going to be at an acting camp in New York. Come to the camp, and I'll talk all about the business. So I got $700 from my mom, went to the camp, and knew it was in the Catskills. Barry Moss, the casting director, came. He said, does anybody want to read for me? I threw my hand up. I went up on stage, I read for him. He said, you're really good. If you ever are in New York, look me up. The camp was over on Sunday. We came back to Maryland. I flew up to New York on Monday. I went to his office, and I said, you told me if I was ever in New York. He said, I didn't mean come to New York. And then he goes, but we actually happened to be casting Vanessa's boyfriend. Read this. And I read it, and he's like, can you go back at 3 o'clock? Came back at 3 o'clock. They worked with me a lot, and I got the part. So, that being said, I think that it's important to, you know, just take every opportunity that comes your way, because oftentimes we don't know. We might see ourselves one way, and the industry and other people see us another way. And sometimes those things that you're trying to hide about yourself are the very things. What is this one acting teacher says? The things you're trying to hide about yourself is somebody else's interesting choice. So, I hope that answered your question.
It does.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Another there. What do you think the biggest difference in the way you prep for a guest star versus a series regular?
Yes, that's a beautiful question. As a guest star, you're trying to serve the story. So it is less important that you find yourself in the material. It's still important to a degree, but with a series regular, I look at a series regular as a blank canvas. You're given one episode of the pilot. There's this loose idea of who this character is. They want somebody to come and fill it up. And they want you to fill it up with you. They want to write to you. They want you to inspire them, you to give them ideas about who this character is. What do they say in the breakdown? Oh, he's a doctor, mid-40s, smart and confident. That's nothing. That is absolutely nothing. You got to come in with the juicy, you know? So I think being a series regular is more about authoring the role. Being a guest star is more about serving the story. Because the series regulars are the ones who are going to have all this personality. You need to be the one that they can bounce off of. So it's a little more of an efficiency, but no matter what the role, you always want to be investing it with your own stakes, your own personality, your own unique take. But it's less important for a guest star or co-star than it is on a series regular. Last thing I'll say about that, a casting director once told me, the formula for a series regular is the material plus you equals the character.
Well, we're about out of time, but I want to ask you a final question.
Yes.
So, if you're talking to a young actor, or maybe just a young person today,
yes,
what is your advice when it comes to their career and how to navigate the personal profession to wander well throughout this industry?
Do not subjugate who you are to fit into the business. Make the business make space for you exactly as you are.
And what is next for you?
So if anybody's interested in my course, it's at www.beingaseriesregular.com. Next for me is more of this. I'm really enjoying this process. And honestly, this course, what I've discovered about myself between now and my next job is that I'm actually a producer. And I never wanted to produce. Being a producer was always the most boring thing it would appear to me. But now I realize that I'm producing, and if I do it my way, it's really fun and enjoyable as long as I feel like I'm giving something. Then I can do any job almost. So what's next for me is I would really like to produce something of a narrative form in this year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Again,
so nice
man.
To talk to you as always. Thank you, everybody.
I want to love living and
MontevideoLiving.com. And again, beingstudiesregular.com. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.